Everybody hear this? This is Marketplace swag right here.
Wait. Oh, my God. Here we go. All right. Look, sorry. Cow. Hi, everybody. I'm Kai Rizdahl.
Uh-oh. I'm Molly Wood, and apparently it is time to start the show.
You caught us unawares, as it were. All right. So we're doing something a little different this week, but first, you know, we got the thing we got to say first. Here we go.
We do. This is Make Me Smart,
yes.
The show where every week we connect the dots between the economy, technology, and culture. And thank you to our friend on Twitter who pointed out that when you put that in whatever fashion, it's ETC.
Yes.
What is the word I'm looking for here?
Et cetera.
For when we use the
ETC.
No, I know. Et cetera. ETC.
So it's an acronym, but it's not really an acronym.
Acronym.
Is it? There's a word person out there who's going to come back and say, no, an acronym is something else. Because I can never forget,
right.
if one of them's where you actually make a word, and then the other one is not that. Anyway, the other part of the thing that we say around here, because the producers beat us if we don't, is that none of us is as smart as all of us. I swear to you, I'm totally sober. I am completely, completely sober.
I mean, honestly, I don't know, but I love it, because it just means we're going to have an awesome show today.
I've had a few too many cups of coffee this morning, but that's all right. Anyway, so, you were saying?
And he's fired up. I was saying that I'm delighted that Kai is in the mood that he is in, because we are essentially hijacking the show today. Because as you know, if you're a regular listener, our producers as of late, they beat us if we go over time on the fixations, and they make us choose just the one. It used to be the news fix. Then it became the fixation, and we had to just pick one thing from the entire universe of news and ideas and things that we were interested in. And today, there's been a thaw in their cold, cold hearts. And they said,
those cold, cold producer
go
hearts.
Go crazy.
Oh, my God.
We love you guys. We love you.
How much
we get
this
to do whatever we want
the final cut? How much of this is going to make it? I don't know. They're sitting in there going, yeah, fine, whatever. We got the razor blades, pal. You just talk about whatever you want. All right. So should we get to it? What do you want to do?
Let's do it.
Okay.
We get to however many links we want.
I think you know, some reasonable number. I mean, you know, I do have a show that goes on the air in a couple hours, which I have to think about. And you got
That's your gig that you got to do.
So
we're getting closer.
We're recording a little late today, so it's whatever.
We'll keep it somewhat restrained. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Kick us off.
Okay.
What you got?
There we go. Okay. So. This is just a super fun thing that I found online Saturday morning in my Twitter feed. Somebody tweeted out this thing from the New York Times. It's an interactive thing from the New York Times from 2014, maybe-ish, like 4 years ago, almost five now. And it's a 25-question quiz about words you use for various things. Like, what do you call a can of soda? And that gives it away, right? I call a can of soda a soda. In some parts of the country, they call it pop and some whatever, right? So there's 25 questions like that. And from those 25 questions, they will tell you where you are from. And it's, for me anyway, it was stunningly, stunningly accurate. And we're going to put it online. Yeah. No, it was crazy. It got me to like two towns over from where I grew up, right? Which was bananas. So, yeah. So anyway, so that's my fun thing. That's my fun thing. Now, it won't work if you're an Army brat or if you perhaps were born somewhere else and lived for a while there and then came here. But honestly, it was cray, cray accurate, and it was super fun. And it's from the New York Times, and we'll put it on our website. And I'll tweet it out again today because it was fun. But that's it. That's my
How
fun thing.
How kind of awesome is it that you have one fun?
You just made water come out of my nose.
Sorry.
So for everybody who doesn't
one
remember,
fun.
Non-regular listeners to the podcast will recall that when we had that guy on to analyze our Twitter feeds, Molly had like 24 fun things in her Twitter feed, 24 fun things she followed. I had one fun.
He had one. Hashtag one fun.
Fun.
In his fixation list, there's hashtag one fun.
One fun.
I love this dialect map mainly because it's so... I mean, it's fascinating. You got to take this quiz because there's all these things in there that, and there are some that are just like, I have no word for this at all.
Right.
Or that doesn't
exist in my town,
like a drive-through liquor store and stuff. It's really interesting. Yeah.
It's super cool. It's super cool. Take it. Yeah. Tweet at us. Let us know if it worked for you. You can get Molly on Twitter at Molly Wood. I'm at Kai Rizdahl. You can also email us, makemesmart@marketplace.org. Getting that plug in there.
Yeah.
All right.
And tell
us. That was my one fun thing. What's your umpteen fun things?
Ironically, my first fixation is about the end of fun in the form, in some ways,
2018,
the end of fun on the internet. No, it's actually, it's the end of sex on the internet, basically. Okay. One thing, I'm going to back it up. I know, I just, that was a little clickbaity. It was just a clickbait.
Just a little bit.
Don't panic. I'm not taking the show all in right. an E direction.
Okay.
One of the many things that I found super interesting over the last few weeks and months of Facebook reporting yes. was the realization after that Times article came out on the big kind of efforts, right, that they put into recovering and dealing with their ongoing crisis post-Cambridge Analytica
right.
was the fact that Facebook, I think we even talked about it on the show, as my fixation that day, was that Facebook essentially bucked the rest of the tech industry and threw its support behind legislation that undermined parts of Section 230, the part that basically says if you're a platform, you're not right. responsible for what right, users right. post. And it was the legislation called FOSTA, which was about ending sex trafficking posts and advertising online. And the whole tech industry had opposed it because it essentially... It's the underpinning. Section 230 is the underpinning of the digital economy. That is why we have these companies, Google, Facebook, Reddit, Twitter, all of that. It's because they didn't get sued out of existence
right.
based on everything that people posted online. So as a PR move, that Times article made it clear that as a PR move, Facebook said, we're going to try to make friends on Washington, in Washington, on the Hill, by throwing our support behind this legislation. And a lot of internet advocates had said, okay, well, this is going to lead to widespread censorship. They're just going to, like, platforms are just going to pre-censor
yeah.
so that they don't accidentally run afoul of these right. laws. Well, Tumblr, we saw recently, put out this sort of vague, like, we're getting rid of all adultish content. Weird pivot away from sex is the way this site, TechDirt, describes it. And then Facebook itself... just put up a whole bunch of new guidelines in its community standards document saying that they're going to ban this wide variety of words from things, posts, like including naughty words to expressing any kind of sexual preference, sexualized slang. Like, it's broadly written enough that TechDirt notes that expressing a sexual partner preference could be deemed as solicitation and not allowed on Facebook. And it's just really fascinating to me because Facebook all along has been very Puritan. Like, their vibe is extremely, like, we just want everything to be clean and nice and
right.
ignore the biological imperative and the whatnot. And I just think it's really interesting that they are now just falling in line with the weird consequences that everybody predicted of throwing their support behind FOSTA as a PR move. Anyway, it's crazy.
Yes. Okay, my turn again?
Yeah.
All right. So, perhaps folks have seen, and if not, go look it up. Number one, Jack Dorsey, the guy who's running Twitter now and one of the co-founders, took like a 10-day silent retreat in Myanmar this past, you know, whatever, 10 days, 2 weeks, tweeted about it. And honestly, it was completely tone deaf because not only has Twitter had its issues with hate speech and you know, being divisive in this society, and Jack's like off having a silent retreat, but number two, he said nice things about Myanmar, which is also known as Burma, which is also known as a police state and Rohingya refugees and all that horrible stuff. So that's Jack Dorsey. And then Elon Musk on 60 Minutes this past weekend was just weird. He was just weird. He was just weird. I encourage you to go have a look. And look, I've talked to the guy a couple of times. We've had him on the program. Clearly incredibly bright, but also quite possibly at some kind of weird breaking point because he was just weird. I mentioned that to mention this. A post that I saw today from a couple of days ago about specifically Jack Dorsey, but it applies to Elon Musk as well. It's by Fred Wilson, who is a venture capitalist in New York. He tweets, his handle is AVC. He tweets at AVC, I think, something like that. Anyway, look him up, Fred Wilson. Well-known establishment guy. He was on the board of Twitter for a while. He helped fund it, so he's got a vested interest. But the thing he said, and I'm just going to, here we go. So here's what Fred said. I'm glad Jack went on a meditation retreat. I'm glad he's taking care of himself. I understand why that tweet storm was tone deaf, but let's not get carried away here. Leaders are humans too. Let's be decent humans to them. And I think that's true. I think there's just so much, you know, outrage and umbrage, and I'll get to this in my next little item, in this economy today, that let's just take a breath. And yes, look, he screwed up, right? And Elon Musk is a weird dude, and he shouldn't have said, I'm going to take it public at 420 funding secured and all of that stuff. And maybe he needs a meditation break too. But let's be human. Let's be decent humans to them. That's it. That's all I'm saying.
It's a good post.
Yeah.
The idea of leadership and self-care, for sure. Yeah. Because otherwise you get to the breaking point that we clearly see.
Right.
Ironically, probably the lesson for Jack is like, dude, social media is bad. Just don't post.
Yeah. Yes.
That is true. Do all the meditating you want. Maybe just don't tweet about it.
Yes.
Although, interestingly, I think my other fixation is on a slightly related note, which is sort of what happens when the hold of the cult leader starts to break and then how ugly that gets.
About whom do you speak?
In this case, I am speaking about Facebook and Google specifically.
Yeah.
But broadly, I'm speaking about Silicon Valley and the culture of conformity. Mm-hmm. But for the people who work in tech companies in the Valley, especially these big ones, and Apple, frankly, has been the standard bearer for this kind of behavior for 2 decades at least. They're mission-driven people, right? It is not an exaggeration to say that working for Google or Facebook or Apple has been a bit like working at a cult. It's the same at Uber. Like, internally, nobody could understand why everyone was so upset about Uber, because they really believed that Uber was going to change the world and save lives. It's like nobody saw it as a transportation company. Mm-hmm. They thought this is a mission-driven thing. And then there's something probably that enhances that about the equity, the idea that you are a direct shareholder in your company because you have been granted stock. You have some ownership in these companies. And what we've been seeing with the Google walkouts and with what is, frankly, to me, an astonishing amount of dissent starting to happen at Facebook, because that Facebook like never broke. Nobody leaked. Nobody, you know, talked about Facebook externally in a negative way. What's interesting is that that's starting to happen. The employees at these companies are starting to object to the policies of their leaders and talk about it publicly. And then the response internally is that the leaders are basically acting like cult leaders do when they're desperate to keep their power, which is that instead of sort of dealing with these issues on the company level, they're trying to crack down on the leakers and they're trying to sort of silence the information. And Mark Zuckerberg has been essentially saying that a lot of this stuff is, for lack of a better term, fake news. Google has this like inform on your neighbor internal program to try to crack down on leakers. Yeah, according to this this article, let's see, it was Gizmodo by way of the Times of London.
Wow.
That there was like an internal meeting where somebody was like, F you, leakers! Like, it's just become this... I'm sure they sounded just like that too.
Yes.
But what's interesting is like when you see the power, the sort of groupthink start to break, the reactions of leadership tells you a lot. And it just makes you wonder if these companies are going to start, I don't know, being like normal.
Yeah, well, they're not going to start being like normal, because if you look at Sheryl Sandberg, right, and all the controversy about her and the George Soros thing from a couple of weeks ago, and then the board comes out and says, yeah, no, we're fine with Sheryl. It's all good. Right?
That's true.
There will be no changing.
I guess normal for the employees, though, right?
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to use that as a pivot to my next thing, right? So I was talking about you guys, like, have a little heart for Jack Dorsey and Elon Musk, because leadership is hard and they're doing the best they can and all that. I direct your attention now to the Washington Post of today, December the 10th, 7:24 a.m. is when this was posted. And yes, we're recording this a day early, so don't at me, bro. anyway, they have this great feature called the Fact Checker. And they have a system whereby they will judge or evaluate the statements made by usually public figures, and by which I mean politicians, and they will assign them a level of truthiness from one Pinocchio to four. That is the previous maximum rating, four Pinocchios, for things that are just like liar, liar, pants on fire, not true. They have now, and here we are as we approach 2 years of the Trump administration, unveiled something called the bottomless Pinocchio. So it is a Pinocchio that never ends, and it is four politicians who continually say false things and say it so often and so many times, and this is quoting the Post, so many times that they are, in effect, engaging in campaigns of disinformation. So there is, I'm going to build a wall, I'm proud of the wall, we have built the wall, the Mexicans are going to pay for the wall, that's the item. And this is a president now who has, in 2 years in office, said false or misleading things 6,000 times. And the Washington Post, I believe what they're doing here is throwing their hands up and saying, bottomless Pinocchios. It's Pinocchios all the way down. That's what they're saying. That's what they're saying. and so, you know, I just, it's been on my mind because I think it's challenging and corrosive when that happens, right?
It does show, though.
Oh, man. Nicely
totally.
Done. Nicely done. All right, well, that puts a capper on my things for this segment of Hosts Hijack the Podcast. What do you got? You got a last one?
Yeah. Yeah, and actually, this is perfect, because what I have is questions. I have questions for you.
Oh. Nobody told me there was going to be a test.
Because I have recently, as have we all, gotten super interested and curious about China.
Yeah.
Like, there's this Huawei arrest.
Yes.
Obviously, right? The CFO of Huawei being arrested in Canada for possible extradition to the United States and so on and so forth. And then today, as we're recording this, you have a Chinese court essentially passing an injunction saying that certain Apple iPhones can't be sold there because of patent infringement over Qualcomm. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if what we're starting to see in a weird way is the tensions, like our two governments starting to use companies as proxy warfare.
So let me put the question back at you. And I asked the folks on Marketplace on the Weekly Wrap on a Friday this question, but I will ask you the same one. If you were Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, would you take a trip to China right now, knowing that Canada has, at the behest of the United States, arrested the number two person, in essence, and the daughter of the founder of one of China's biggest telecommunications companies?
Right.
So I think Tim Cook is probably safe, but I think his CFO may or may not be so safe. And if I'm a business person doing business in China, I'm going to be looking out. Carlos Ghosn, also arrested, the car guy. So, you know, it's a really, really dicey time. And I'll tell you what else, actually. For as much as you want to give government officials the benefit of the doubt that they're telling you straight what policy is going to be, I do not take the president's people, Robert Lighthizer, his trade representative, Peter Navarro, his trade advisor, and Larry Kudlow, the head of the National Economic Council. I don't actually take them at their word that the arrest of this Huawei CFO is unrelated to and separate from and will be kept separate from trade policy, because that just does not stand to reason. It just doesn't. Right. And I don't know where this goes. And the idea that we are now by March the 1st, which is what Lighthizer says, going to have some definitive resolution of the trade dispute that we're in coming out of the G20 conversation with President Trump and President Xi down in Argentina 2 weeks ago, I don't see how that holds up. I don't see how it gets better.
And also, at least in our government, there is a pretense, you could argue, that government and business are separate. In China, that is not the case.
Well, so look, Huawei's biggest shareholder is the China Mobile Group, which is a state-backed entity. So it is it is all very closely intertwined. The founder, which is to say the CFO's father, is a former official in the People's Republic, not the People's Republican Army, People's Liberation Army, sorry, the PLA. And look, Xi Jinping and this guy probably have tea together twice a month.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it feels to me like in another era, what this is us capturing someone's spy.
Right.
You know, but now it's businesses as proxy, and it just is really interesting and feels like a thing, for lack of a better way to put it.
Yeah.
And then speaking of China, a Make Me Smart or tech listener, if you were the person on Twitter who recommended the Three Body Problem series to me,
so you know
please write to me. Have you read this? Do you know these books?
So here's what happened. And you and I had a conversation about Seven Eves. Remember Seven Eves?
Yeah.
By what's Neil, what's his name?
Neil Stephenson.
Neil Stephenson, right? And you and I both loved that, and it was amazing. And then I went looking for similar books, and somebody online recommended The Three Body Problem, which is by a Chinese author, and it's in English translation from the Chinese. And it starts actually in the Cultural Revolution in China in like 1968, right? And it's cool and crazy, and I could only get about 100 pages into it, and I gave up on the first volume.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, dang, because maybe not dang. I am about halfway through the first book, and it is super fascinating.
Okay.
And one of the things, when I was starting this book and reading about the Cultural Revolution, I was thinking about China's monoculture and the control of the government and just the idea that this movement, the Cultural Revolution, could essentially cause almost everybody in China to rise up and say, like, you know, we're kill all the academics and outcast all the scientists. And I started thinking about how maybe America is fundamentally ungovernable, and maybe that's a good thing. Like, I don't know that you could get 90% of Americans on board with any movement.
Right, right, Right. Which is great, right? Which talks about a pluralistic society and a diversified economy and all of those things. Look, I totally agree. I think that's a really interesting take on that. Because we certainly could not get 90% of people in this country to agree on like what day it is practically, especially right now. You know?
And that maybe as much as we talk about that as a bad thing, maybe that's the one thing that will save us, is that at some point we're just oppositional defiant enough as a country that we're never going to go all the way in one horrible direction.
Oppositional defiant. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. All right.
I just went ahead and diagnosed us.
So that's us rambling for a little while. You guys can join this conversation anytime you like. We've got a Facebook group going. Go to Facebook and search for Make Me Smart Podcast on Facebook. And yes, we understand the privacy thing. And yes, we understand us bashing Zuckerberg and the cognitive dissonance there. We get that. But that's the outlet where it is right now.
So check your privacy settings.
That's what that was. That apology was check your privacy settings. That's what it is. All right.
Anyway,
there you go.
And please join the conversation. Oh. It's worth it. And whoever it was who recommended that to me, I really wish that Twitter would just let me search my own dang feed and replies, but it won't.
Can
so please write back to me because I want to thank you in person.
You can't do
that.
You can't
search. I don't think so. All right. We will take a short break and then we'll be back with your stuff.
Make Me Smart and Marketplace are built on independent, nonprofit news.
That is right. And we believe it's our responsibility to bring reliable, objective reporting to as many people as we can to support thoughtful conversations and informed decision making. But to do that, we need your help.
Just $5 a month. That's all it takes to become a marketplace investor.
The payoff is what you hear and what you hopefully learn every time you listen. It's also knowing you're making it possible for us to reach more people in more ways.
You're helping us produce journalism that you can trust, and that makes us all smarter. See what we did there? Now's the time to do it, folks. Donate today at marketplace.org. And thanks. All right. So it's y'all's turn.
Hi, Kai and Molly.
This is Brent in Detroit.
This is Rebecca from Baltimore.
It was great to hear comments on my question about GDPR.
I wanted to put in my vote.
I want to discuss a slightly different but maybe related thing.
So let's jump right in. The first listener says that she is pondering, as I believe we all are, the personal consequences of climate change.
My name is Stephanie, and I'm the mother of a four-year-old who happens to be named Kai.
Winner.
I would love to be able to give Kai a brother or sister, but I'm finding it increasingly hard to wrestle with the notion that I would be bringing a child into a world that is going to be markedly different due to climate change. We've known for years that climate change is happening, and over the last year, we've seen even more evidence demonstrating that it's much worse than we had anticipated. I know in my head that having another kid is bad for the environment, but I'm having trouble explaining that to my heart.
Dark place.
Every child
anybody?
Is hope. No,
no,
every child is hope, Stephanie.
Okay. Oh,
every child is hope.
Okay. You keep talking then, because I'm not finding that.
That's
hope.
All I got, really.
Oh,
but
okay.
I also think like every. I mean, look, I get you. But throughout history, all kinds of people have worried that they are bringing their child into
a worse place.
You know,
that is true.
The last generation or a worse place. But I don't know. You can't worry about that.
All right.
Every child is hope. That's
every
all I got.
Hope. Okay. Scott James Meldrum, he's from Pittsburgh, sent us his voice memo about some news happening in Wisconsin and up in Michigan. Ooh, I know where this one's going.
My current fixation is the lame duck legislation currently taking place in Michigan as well as Wisconsin. The outgoing state legislatures are taking steps to weaken the incoming governors and attorneys general. In Michigan, the case I'm more familiar with, the legislature is also outright undermining the will of the people through bills that hamstring the three ballot measures that passed with overwhelming support. Anti-gerrymandering policies, enhanced voter rights, and legalized recreational marijuana. The message has always been, if you don't like it, vote them out. But when they can affect policies at such a level, even after being voted out, what is left for the constituency to do?
Yeah, completely agree. Mm-hmm. The only thing I have to say is that this one is so far from over, right? It's going to court, and you know what? It's going to court, full stop.
It is. Sean Houston, like the city, from Los Angeles, sent us this voice memo. And full disclosure, his wife, Annika Houston, works at Marketplace. She's our social media strategist, and she sends
and
these awesome emails every week that have our stats and GIFs and stuff. I love it.
GIFs.
Anyway, here's her hubby.
I'm increasingly concerned by what seems to be the growing divide between rural and urban and suburban Americans. Is this just a narrative or is it real? Are the interests of these two communities as divergent as our politics makes them out to be? Or are we just talking past each other? It certainly feels like less urbanized communities are missing out on the economic expansion. But the increasing cost of living in and near cities seems to be eating up whatever economic gains are accruing to urbanites.
So let's see. In order, yes, it's real. Yes, they are divergent. Yes, we're talking past each other. Yes, they're missing out on the economic expansion in less urbanized communities. And yes, cost of living in cities seems to be eating up whatever economic gains are accruing to urbanites. So yes, all the way around, yes, all of that is true.
You are super right about that. We'll have a couple links in the show notes about that, too. We just did a story on Marketplace Tech, actually, this past week, Thursday, I think, on how rural America is turning into a digital desert in particular. I will say I had not thought about, and I think it's a good, I'd love to hear more reporting on Marketplace about the cost of living eating up any economic gains. That particular part of that, I have feel like I haven't heard, and that's really, really interesting and also kind of a bummer.
I do wonder, though, if it's like, so the top five cities probably, right? You know, so New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Atlanta, and I'm going to pick another one, like Dallas. That's probably San Francisco, right? Of course. Definitely true in those top five-ish cities. But if you get to, you know, I don't know, Kansas City, Mo, or, you know, what's it like in Phoenix, or, you know, other cities, I do wonder if that's true. I don't know the answer.
Phoenix is a good example of a city that's had a lot of economic expansion but is still affordable. But I think what we're finding is that even other mid-sized cities just aren't keeping up. In terms of, you know, bringing in new companies and the digital economy. And it's really, it is a seriously troubling trend.
Yep. All right. You going to make this turn, or am I going to make this turn? That is my challenge to you, Ms. Wood.
I don't know. I guess the turn is use whatever you have. Well, use whatever money you have left to support public media.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So look, it is the end of the year. Marketplace, as hopefully all y'all know, is a nonprofit news organization. Make Me Smart is part of Marketplace. Marketplace Tech is part of Marketplace. Marketplace Morning Show Report is part of Marketplace. Marketplace My Show is part of Marketplace. It's all part of Marketplace. And here's the deal. We cannot do this, any of this, the fun that Molly and I have, but also the very serious news that she does on Tech and that I do on Marketplace. We cannot do any of it without your support. And it is end of year fun drive time. It is end of year. Please give us your money time. That's where we are.
It is. Luckily, it's the exact time when you're also making your list of charitable donations and tax-deductible giving.
That's so right.
I'm just saying, put us on the list because we are a nonprofit news organization and we have a really cool name for it if you decide to join us financially.
It is cool. It is super cool. It is super cool.
So I don't know who came up with this. We need to find out.
I think it was Stephanie Patterson, our new-ish director of development, came up with this club for people who want to invest in Marketplace. They're called the Marketplace Investors. Get it? Because we're a financial program.
Because money.
Yeah, it's money. And look, we got a bunch of swag. So you can become a Marketplace Investor for $5 a month. And it is $5 a month, right? Or is it just $5?
Yeah. As
$5
little
one
as
time.
$5.
Tony Wagner's giving me the cut sign across the thing. Stop.
One time.
Talking. One time. $5. So look, join up. And then we got some cool, cool swag too. And I personally, my favorite one, honestly, it's so, all right. So I'll give you the top of the line. The top of the line is a Marketplace hoodie. But I personally like the water bottle that we have because the slogan on the water bottle says liquid assets.
I mean, you guys.
I think that's so funny. I think that's
the financial puns.
I think it's so
like
funny.
They never stop.
$7 a month gets you the liquid assets water bottle. It's kind of awesome. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Yep. $7 a month. Liquid assets.
But I love that.
This is also apparently the last pledge drive for the Marketplace socks, which were super popular, even though it freaked me out to see the bottom of Kai's foot on Twitter.
Well, so let's talk about that for a minute. She asked me to take off my shoes and put on these socks and hold my feet up. And so I did because I know my job around here, which is to do what producers tell me to do. That's all I'm saying, except for this episode of this podcast.
Anyway, please do that. And if you do it now, your donation, this is the kind of stuff that I'm new enough to public radio that I still freaking love saying. If you do it now, your donation will go twice as far, thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from the Candida Fund. Back to our original programming with an answer to the Make Me Smart question, which is, of course, what is something you thought you knew that you later found out you were wrong about? Keith Beckman sent us this.
I was raised in the IFB, or Independent Fundamental Baptist Movement. We were young Earth creationists. That is, we believed the Earth, the entire universe, were created 6,000 years ago over the course of 6 days, literally according to the story told in the book of Genesis. And obviously that's not true. Painfully obviously, I hope. Yet it took me a long time to realize that. When you're indoctrinated your entire life into this belief structure, you have so much invested in this belief structure. And that makes it really hard to change your mind. So in the end, it wasn't one thing that changed my mind. It was a whole bunch of little things showing me the ways this belief structure didn't correspond to reality. And one of those things was learning more about what we know of how the natural biological world evolved to the place it is today. And it opened my mind to so much beauty and so much wonder in the natural world that I was shutting myself off from to preserve this belief structure. And it gave me the tools I needed to change my mind.
Well.
Wow. Wow, yeah, that was a full-on documentary.
That scored and everything.
I know. But I choose to believe it is a very hopeful message because, man, if you can overcome
what
you were literally raised with and change your mind, there maybe is hope for discourse after all.
One more time. The Make Me Smart question is, what is something you thought you knew but then found out you were wrong about it? Email us your voice memo, makemesmart@marketplace.org, and we will get it onto the pod. Something we were supposed to say up top, but we didn't, is that there is only one more new show coming up for 2018. We're going to do predictions from some people who've been on the pod and some people who haven't. What's coming, they think, and what we think, right, in 2019? Mm-hmm. Yes?
Mm-hmm. And then over Christmas, New Year's, and into early January, you still get new episodes in your podcast feed. They will be some of our favorite interviews of the year. And then we will be back with all new shows for the third year of Make Me Smart. We're getting long in the tooth, guys. So is this show. We got to go.
That was a turn. That was a turn right there. That's what that was.
Or as my son likes to say, skirt, skirt, which I think is some video game noise for screeching brakes. I don't know. Make Me Smart is produced by Shara Morris. Senior producer is Eve Tro. We have nothing but respect for them, despite everything we said at the beginning of the show. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Hopefully no one doubted our respect for him. This week's program was engineered by Ben Tolliday, who is back from paternity leave.
Yes.
Welcome back and congrats, Ben.
Yes.
Our theme music was composed by that very same Ben and Daniel Ramirez.
Goes down from the hill from here, pal. I'm just telling you. I'm just telling you.
Does
not. Because what's going to happen is the baby's going to start sleeping for a while, and you're going to go, oh, yeah, this is great. This is great. And then they're going to stop sleeping. All right. Executive Director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves. Senior Vice President and General Manager is Deborah Clark.